here we are, hey? And we've been talking about what does it look like to be the go of Christ? Well, what does it look like to be a witness? That's an old-fashioned word. I remember the first time I heard that word, I was just to become a Christian. We went into the Hay Street Mall and gave out tracts to people. It was really encouraging and really cheery. And I am so glad that I've never done it since. So here we are. The message this morning will be about 20 minutes, 25 minutes perhaps. And it's really kind of centered around two questions and maybe a couple of other side questions, but mainly two questions. And the first question is this: who is in and who is out? Who is in and who is out? Because we all know that in any good organisation, you've got to have the people that are in and the people that are out. True? Maybe not. I know, but that's my first question. When I think about this idea of witness, when I think about this idea of the go of Christ, I think about, well, who is in and who is out? Because there's lots said, and don't worry, those of you who think I'm going to go on some left-wing rant, I'm not. I'm not. I'm honestly not. I don't think. But seriously, this is kind of the climate that we tend to live in at the moment. You could be forgiven for thinking that the church is all about who's in and who's out. And I guess this morning my first question is, well then, let's think about that. Who is in and who is out? And I've got a few things that I'm going to talk about that are sort of connected. The first one is in the 1990s, in Lima, Peru, the president called, you know how you have a war on drugs? He decided to have a war on street kids because it was looking bad. There was thousands of street kids on the streets of Lima. And so he started this deal about getting them off the streets, and they were started to be treated really, really poorly. They were already treated really badly because they were street kids. But then it just got worse and kids were killed left, right and centre. And lots of terrible things happened. And there's a lady named Lucy Borgia. She was in an organisation called Generacion, and it was actually about HIV. But she had met a couple of 12-year-olds, and she reached out to help them. But they were around 12 years old, and they were scared to spend the night on the streets. And so she said, look, why don't you come and spend the night in our offices? And look, if anybody else that you know is feeling the same way, then you can get him to come as well. And then she told the guy who was the security guy there to make sure she let him in. Okay. So Lucy had to go to a family do that night. And so she came afterwards back to the office just to see if there was those couple of kids. So Lucy indeed had a surprise awaiting her that evening when she arrived at the Generacion office. Her key unlocked the front door, but try as she might, she could not shove it open. It felt like a rolled-up carpet had been lodged behind the door to block the entry. With the help of her sons, Lucy finally moved the door to create enough space to squeeze through. As she reached blindly in the dark in search of the light switch, Lucy tripped over the carpet roll. She deftly caught her balance and leaned her body against the wall. Her fingers searched the wall until she eventually found the light switch. Once the light came on, Lucy looked down at her feet and discovered several young kids curled up on the floor sleeping, their bodies jammed against the door. She cast her vision around the room, though it was hard to register what she was seeing. Sleeping children covered every nook and cranny of the office. I even found young kids snuggled tightly inside the cupboards where we stored our office supplies, Lucy recalls. Lucy counted over 600 children. I don't know why it gets me every time. It's an old book. She discovered over 600 children who slept in the office that night. She didn't know all the details that caused these boys and girls to run scared, but she clearly sensed that her life would never be the same. Stacked one against the other, asleep on the floor of my office, those children seemed vulnerable. She says, they didn't have anyone to be their advocate to defend their rights. And I knew what path I had to take. So she took that path, and she actually had to leave the organisation that she was in because they had some rules about in and out. And but she decided, I'm not going to live with those rules. Because that's the gospel. Because the gospel is not about in and out. The gospel is not about in and out. The gospel is not about in and out. That's a mistake. It's a blasphemy to think that it's about in and out. So, I love N.T. Wright. He's an old guy, so I feel like him and me are pretty close in age. And he was asked once, just recently, what would you tell your, you know, if your children were gathered around your bed and you're dying, what would you want to tell them? It takes just a couple of minutes. We're going to watch it. It says on. Look at that. I was stressing because I thought I'm sniffing like crazy, and so I turned it off while the video was on. Let me read it. Come to me, all who... I thought I was doing pretty good to them. I thought I was cutting a sophisticated, intelligent, and yet heartfelt kind of a vibe. Oh, well. Back to the weeping prophet, I guess. Come to me, all who are weary and whose load is heavy, or who are heavy laden, King James says, I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble-hearted, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy to wear, and my load is light. Come to me, all. All. All who are weary and whose load is heavy. Everyone. Who's in and who's out? No one's out. Come to me, all who are weary and whose load is heavy. Whether you are the wealthiest person or the poorest person, regardless of who you are, God in Jesus Christ, and that's how we see God, through Jesus. That's what the New Testament says. He doesn't have this hierarchy of need. You may well be very, very well off this morning. You know, Kelly and I live just across the road in West Leederville. Compared to other, some people, we're well off. Compared to others, we're not. You know, it's just, it's not relevant. What's relevant, he says, come to me, all who are weary and whose load is heavy. I don't know, have you ever been weary? Has your load ever been heavy? Regardless of who you are, where you are in your life, regardless of whether you live in Claremont or Flippin, I don't know, wherever else. I was brought up in Tewart Hill and Nollamara. And there was times when I was weary and my load was heavy. And I know people that were brought up in City Beach. You know, that's somewhere around here, isn't it? Kelly was brought up in City Beach. I'm being silly. Who would say, I've been weary and my load's been heavy at times. But he says, everyone who's in that position, come to me. Everyone. It says, I'll find rest for my soul. You will find rest for your soul. I could take an hour to contextualize this, but you know, I can't. I'm looking at that and I'm going, see, that's the heart of a God who loves. He wants you and I and everybody all to have rest for their souls, to have rest inside them. No matter what else might be happening, what diagnosis the doctor has given, or whether you're striving for things or not. I met this young guy, I knew him, he was at a cafe, and he's 25, and he was talking about, he's got this plan, right? And it's a big plan, I'm telling you, this young guy. I guess he just had, you know, old bloke willing to listen. And so he told me his plan. And I'm listening to that plan, you know, and I'm thinking, that's really awesome. But you know what you really need, mate? You need rest for your soul. You need to feel the peace. Whether you've got a plan or you're thinking, plan? I don't know. Plan? I've got no plan. We used to say to our boys, and arguably it's worked out, guys, don't worry about it if you haven't got a plan. Hook up with a girl who does. And you'll be fine. Anyway, moving right along. Got to be careful because my daughter-in-law is here. And that girl's got a plan, I can tell you. She's awesome. When it talks about this finding rest for your soul, it's the part of the verse that really hits me. It's a beautiful verse. I mean, I want to be here every day. You know, come to me. All right, I'm here, you know. Because there's times probably every day where I feel some of this stuff. The deal here, though, the Gospels is full of this. Everybody, all, everybody. I want you to have rest for your soul. I want you to be yoked with me. because I don't want your load to be inappropriate. I don't want your load to weigh you down, to weigh your soul down. Not that you won't go through strife and trial and trouble. Of course you will. We all will. I will. Everybody does. But he says, but I want that load to be a load that's in rest because you're walking with me. You know, the biggest unrest that I have, don't know about you, but I'd say the biggest unrest. What's the biggest unrest? What do you reckon? Yell some stuff out. Children? There's a close one. Yep. Yeah, what else? Sorry? Money? Yeah. Absolutely. You've got too much, too little. I'll give you my answer. Me. The biggest unrest for my soul is me. And can I suggest that the biggest unrest for you, your soul, is actually you? Our problem usually is us, in other words. The problem we actually have, when you go back into Genesis and you have a look at the first set of stories about creation and people, you'll note that it always ends up being about me. It ends up being about wresting control away from a creator and wresting that control back to the created person. That's in many ways, that's what it's all about. And so Jesus says, I want you to have rest for your soul. I want you to have that rest, regardless of whether you're the greatest, most well-known composer in the world, or you're a street kid in Peru, or you're a street kid on the Thai border. I want you to have rest. So the second question, the second main question, is wrapped around John 8, verses 1 to 11. This is in the Gospels here. I'm going to go to John 8. I'm not putting it up on the board. Because I couldn't figure out how to do it. Too many verses. Couldn't get him into the little thing. Because John Bergman didn't send me, you know, the PowerPoint. All right? Is he here? Hey? Is he run off, has he? Yeah, exactly. Could you just not tell him I said that? Anyway, so he's quite a lot bigger than me. A woman caught in adultery. Then everyone went home, but Jesus went to the Mount of Olives. Early the next morning, he went back to the temple. All the people gathered around him, and he sat down and began to teach them. The teachers of the law and the Pharisees brought in a woman who had been caught committing adultery, and they made her stand before them all. Teacher, they said to Jesus, this woman was caught in the very act of committing adultery. In our law, Moses commanded that such a woman must be stoned to death. Now, what do you say? They said this to trap Jesus, so that they could accuse him. But he bent over and he wrote on the ground with his finger. As they stood there asking him questions, he straightened himself up and said, whichever one of you has committed no sin may throw the first stone at her. Then he bent over and wrote on the ground. When they heard this, they all left one by one, the older ones first. Jesus was left alone with the woman still standing there. He straightened himself up and said to her, where are they? Is there no one left to condemn you? No one, sir, Jesus answered, she answered. Well then, Jesus said, I do not condemn you either. Go, but don't sin again. I really like that story for lots of reasons. I love it because it's Jesus crossing over all these barriers, and we don't have to go into a big context here about the barriers that he's crossing. You know, all the stuff that he's doing that he shouldn't be doing. He's in the temple where he should be upholding the law of Moses. There's so many things going on here. But what he said, of course, to these people was, what a bunch of hypocrites you are. You're so concerned about what you think this girl has done or not done, and you're completely ignoring the sin that you have, the unrest in your soul, if you like. You're completely ignoring that, but you're real happy to put somebody else down. I don't know about you, but I quite like that. I do that in lots of subtle different ways. I put other people down. I try not to look as though I'm a hypocrite. I don't find that goes well when you make it obvious. But I think subtly we can do it. And I think we can do it in a way where people think we're quite holy and quite righteous and quite ununderstandable. Well, you know, it's obvious, isn't it? Really, the way they're behaving. But God, seen through Jesus, just doesn't fit that lawgiver thing. He just doesn't fit it. In fact, he utterly and completely rejects it. We might not like that sometimes because, oh, the whole world is going to hell in a handbasket. Maybe so. But what we have is how Jesus behaved. That's what we have. That's what we have. No, that's what we have. We have how he behaved. And he said, I'm the Lord, Kyrios. He said, I'm the Lord. Okay? You need to be obedient to me. Follow my ways. Anyway, I find that's helpful to me. Because half the time, as much as I want to act like the opposite is true, I think I fall into the same category. So the question then that I'm asking is this. What if you came back next week? Because he says go and sin no more, right? Because that's the get out of jail clause for all you hardcore evangelicals, right? Yeah. I know he did the forgiveness thing. Yeah. I know he did the inclusion thing. Yeah. I know he said come. Yeah, I know he did that. I know he did all that. I know he showed their hypocrisy. But then he said to her, he said, don't sin anymore. And I just asked myself the question, what if she came back next week? Because I remember when Peter and the guys were asking him, how many times am I supposed to forgive? Peter says to Jesus, 7 times? Like, that's a lot. Do I have to give this 7 to forgive him 7 times? And Jesus said, maybe 7 times 70? Jesus didn't say like, because he wasn't a teenager. But having said that, he said 7 times 70, 490. 490 times. And I know what you're thinking. That's really hard to count. You'd have to have like a big task list, wouldn't you? Don't you reckon? Then you can sort of count it off. Well, that is now 311 times. And I don't know whether you're aware, but you only have 157 times wherewith I'll be able to forgive you. And after that, you're in deep trouble. I let them stone you. Now, I'm telling this to myself. But the next time an Uber comes out of my credit card and I didn't go on the Uber, that's it. I'm chucking him out. Does anybody have somewhere for an 18-year-old to live, by the way? I'm not trying to make a point about rules or not rules. What I'm trying to talk about is when it comes to inclusion, Jesus sets the pattern. He's the one who sets the pattern. And it seems to me that if you wanted to be hardcore, biblicist, you'd have to say, well, at least 7 sevens, 490 times. So I don't know if they did the temple each week. So about 490 weeks. I think it's about 10 years. So she could come back for about 10 years. And then she'd no longer be forgiven. What am I saying by that? I know I'm being silly in some ways. I think it's a key question. You see, Jesus, as I see the Gospels, and as I read through it, and I had a bit of a look at Acts as well, time and time again, Jesus' presence in a person's life changes them. Time and time and time again. I love it when Jesus calls Peter, James and John, and he does the fish thing, we've been toiling all night, those of you who've been in church for a while. And he says, put the nets down on this side and you can get some fish. And they say, yeah, we've been toiling all night, but okay, I'll put the nets down. So he puts the nets down and this whole bunch of fish come up. And Peter gets down on his knees and says, depart from me, O Lord, I'm a sinful man. Because that's got a lot to do with fish, hasn't it? No, it's got a lot to do with the presence of God. When God shows up, when God says come, and when we answer time and time and time and time again, and for time immemorial, people's lives have been changed. Not by a set of flippin' rules. Doesn't change anybody. Of course you have to have rules. Yes, society runs by rules, but Jesus Christ says come. Come. I'll work out the details. You don't work out the details for Craig. I work out the details for Craig. You don't work out the details for Phil or for Peter. I work out those details. I say come. Okay, 2 minutes. Because I've got 2 more slides. And we're going to look at these flipping slides no matter what. broken people become broken people who shine the light of the world, imperfectly shining the perfect light. He says, come. Imperfect people come. He starts to change them. They still remain imperfect, but they start shining this light that's real. They start shining a light that's real. And their responsibility, my responsibility, yeah, your responsibility, is to say, come. Come to him. Come. So who's in and who's out? If only we had a list. But we don't. We just have the words of Jesus, who said, come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I'll give you rest. He says, come, take my yoke. I'm gentle and humble in heart, and you'll find the rest for your souls that you need. So if you're here today and you've never done that, because mum and dad believe it, doesn't mean you can believe it. You might, I don't know where you're at, but he can give the rest that nothing else can give. Awesome. Kel, are you coming up?
Would the people who are going to distribute the communion like to come?